So I'd like to start with the answer, because a lot of times, you know, you wonder, well, where is this person going? So I'd like to start with some conclusions that I think are important. And I'd like to say that when we talk about different products, there's a commonality with all of it. The products may be new, but the goals of the tobacco industry, their methods, and the consequences are the same. And so are our inadequate responses to their new developments. Their goal, addict our children, take their money, their health, and finally their lives. They do that expertly, and we haven't stopped them. Their methods, they expertly play on our weaknesses and desires, and we allow them to do it. The effects are well known, but largely ignored in terms of the magnitude of the threat. Our response, we need to have a response that is radically different. We need to play our game and not theirs. Currently, we play their game. Let's talk about this. So how many of you in the room remember watching Johnny Carson on television? How many of you remember Carnac? All right, that's a polite way of saying how many of you were pretty old like me, right? So those who haven't seen him, he always called himself the Swami, and he had a turban on, and he had on a cape, and he would begin, and he'd put the envelope on his forehead, and he'd begin with the answer, and your job was to guess the question. So the answer here is 140,000. Can any of you guess the question? Now, we should have music playing in the background. Dun, dun, dun. We'll move on and say, this is the number of buses necessary to transport the 5.6 million children who are alive today who will die unnecessarily from tobacco. So somehow we need to put this in a context that wakes people up. Somehow we need to make this real and acquaint them with the catastrophe that's occurring in front of us, which is importantly entirely preventable. How many times do we see intractable problems around the world or in our own country, be it obesity or gun control or poverty or hunger? It's a multifactorial thing. This is very simple. There is a single source for this problem. We know how to stop it, but we choose not to. And in my mind, that makes us all complicit unless we act. So back to tobacco. We choose tobacco because it's a common source. They have new products, but it's still the tobacco industry, taking you from a new product to a very old one. They're basically the cigarette. So we'll talk about the targets, the products they use now to entice youth, their tactics, which, believe me, is just back to the future. What worked in the past works beautifully today, and we need to stop it. And we need to talk about the reality and then some solutions. So we know the obvious that by the age of 18, 90% of smokers were addicted. So this is a disease of childhood that is not an accident. It is by design. But the disease is manifest later in adults, so we focus on adults, and we don't focus like we should on children. Simply saying it's illegal is hardly enough. It's an excuse, not a reason. So they target children, teens, women, and minority, right? The most vulnerable in our society are being preyed on by an industry that knows exactly what they're doing. We know exactly what they're doing, but we're playing their game, and they're winning. So here are the products to entice youth, basically. They're attractive, they're seductive, and importantly, they work. They're calculated, and importantly, they're avoidable. So here's an example of where they circumvent regulations. These are basically cigarettes disguised as cigars, right? We know that you can't sell cigarettes as singles, onesies as they're called, but they found a way around it. They call it a tobacco. It's colorful. Again, it's attractive. It tastes good, and it's affordable. That's the key event, the key feature. It's affordable. We know kids don't buy a pack right off the bat. They buy one. We also know that they leave these cigarillos out to be stolen, so people get addicted, and the industry replenishes them at no charge. It's a brutal industry. These are starter cigarettes, and we don't stop it. So here are the new products. Snus, basically this and other products, they're designed to overcome smoking bans. The new vehicle for addictive nicotine, which are more socially acceptable. Right? So you don't smoke, you have another vehicle for getting nicotine. These are even better. You don't spit, you don't have to take them out, you can swallow them. It's something that I think we go at this the wrong way. You heard that, how are we going to combat all the new kinds of things? You know, you don't kill the hydra by going after the snake. You cut it off at the head. If we try to blunt every new device, we play their game and we lose. We need to go exactly at the source, and that's what the tobacco industry fears most, which is cost and branding and availability. And unless we do that in a way that really is effective, we're kidding ourselves. We're confusing action with effectiveness. So here's an old delivery system being branded as a new one. And note that it's the same techniques that they use. It's reborn as Safer, a filter. Now, in the old days, we know that the filter was marketed knowingly as a supposedly as a safer cigarette when they knew very well that it wasn't. People just puffed harder. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. Here's the electronic cigarette. I think a dangerous product. We know it's flavor plus nicotine plus high tech, and we'll see later how more people use it than would ordinarily be exposed to tobacco, and it has its own problems. I think this is the great half truth, because technically it could be a way for smoking cessation, but in terms of weighing what it will cause versus what it could do, it's still another gateway drug and another opportunity to addict people to nicotine and a bridge to tobacco. So the pitch back to the future is the same. It's cool to smoke. It's safer than before. It's not. And it tastes good. So it's about taste. A bridge for smoker and a justification for freedom. So let's talk some more about this. Newer products, same targets. Women, minorities, and youth. And the question is, why are we kind of numb to that? In any other circumstance, if an industry preyed on these groups, they would be social pariahs. But somehow, we're not moved by that. Somehow, it's okay. So these new products allow the habit in non-smoking environment. That's what we mean by the bridge. Certainly could help you stop smoking, but in fact, it ensures that you continue the habit. When we eliminated smoking on our campus, not just in the building, many people resisted, but many more people came forward and said, thank you. When I went long periods without being able to smoke, I realized I needed to stop. That's the same thing that happens to a minor degree when you can't smoke in a restaurant, when you can't smoke in a building of any kind, that the more restrictive the smoking becomes, the more people realize they need to stop. Since 70% of the people want to stop anyway, this is the push to get them there. So this is about subliminal messaging. So with Virginia Slims, remember when that very effective campaign came out promoting women's tennis and commingling it with smoking. At that time, the incidence of heart disease for women was much lower than men. Now today, it's the same. Because it preyed on the idea that if you want to be slim, you smoke. It's a dietary aid, and it worked. But visually, they're skinny, and they want you to think that way too. The same thing with Camel Crush and the same thing with Marlboro. They've turned their target onto African Americans. As you already know, menthol is already the predominant use of tobacco with African Americans, and they've gone from cowboys now to African Americans, and that's what the subliminal part with the black color is about, and that's what the menthol is about. So smoking has never been viewed as cool, but the important point is that the people who smoke are cool. That's why young kids do it. They do it through emulation. The tobacco industry knows that. Now we know it, and we think, well, they shouldn't do that, but listen, in issues of choice, neuroscience tells us, and marketing knows, that when it comes to making a choice, what we know is secondary to what we feel. We choose on what we feel, particularly when it becomes more difficult or more complex. So the new pitch vaping, it's safe, supposedly, it's high tech, it's flavored, it's unregulated, largely it's by the FDA, and it has an emotional appeal. Again, it's cool. They appeal to a sense of persecution for those who do smoke. Remember, it's about freedom. And it's really kind of Machiavellian or Orwellian that to say that when you're addicted, you're free. And that's the big lie. The big lie works. We want our freedom back. I remember seeing that with one of the commercials. We want our right to continue our addiction is what it is. And it was born in their childhood. So vaping. Here we have pictures of it's colorful. It tastes good, and again, it's the flavor. And who are flavors aimed at? Children. What are flavors for? To mask the effects of tobacco, and you become, it's another bridge because it's familiar. It tastes good and it's familiar. If you notice, they're always selling taste, they're always selling emotional appeal, and there was selling the packaging. So this is a continuation. Look, there's a harmless little character. He's probably the equivalent of Joe Camel. It's fun. It's nothing serious. It'll just kill you. So the reality is it's about nicotine addiction. That's the core problem. Any product that has nicotine will take you to home base, which is tobacco eventually. The new products aren't as well regulated as cigarettes. It's a wide open field again that basically evades the master agreement that we had, the master settlement. It has uncertain concentrations of nicotine, many times much higher, so you require more and more over time. And the uncertain contents. We know that there are many instances of known contamination. The new products are, in effect, tobacco training. One, you get the addiction to the nicotine, and if you want to train someone to, the process itself is habituation. You know, people get up, they think, I'll have a cup of coffee and I'll have a cigarette. And if you do this to get your nicotine, what could be a better training mechanism to get it from a cigarette? I do believe that it could stop a few people from smoking. I think it will addict far, far more. So, and I think with their flavor too, the other thing is it's another common thing. The more familiar something is, the more likely you are to continue it, and again, the flavor is a bridge. So here are the conventional tools, the conventional solutions. We know regulation is slow, difficult, and uneven. If it worked, it wouldn't exist anymore, considering how long it's been in effect, right? Education is important but uncertain. The tobacco industry loves education because what we know and what we do are two different things. Are there many people around who still think that tobacco is good for you, but does it stop them? It hasn't stopped 40 million people. It isn't working. I think it's necessary, but totally insufficient. Public awareness and public opinion is an important thing, and that's the part that we need to lead. We need to change public opinion into something that, gee, it's a private issue, and really something that's unfortunate, but we'll pretend like it doesn't exist, as opposed to being an affront to everyone, and an industry cynically stalks the vulnerable, addicts them, takes their money, their health, and their lives. In the discovery, which we have seen in these trials, it's very clear that the courts refer to it as racketeering. That's what brought the tobacco industry to the table in the first place. It was over unless they changed their approach and reached an agreement. These are drug lords that stalk kids, and somehow we need to reawaken people to that and change the effects. Taxation is the most effective tool for discouraging youth. Unfortunately, it's the most difficult to enact. Our state, we went through so much to raise it by, I think it was 25 or 50 cents, where we know the social cost in terms of lost productivity and direct medical costs is about $10 to $15 a pack. To my libertarian friends, I say, listen, if you believe in just market forces, then it needs to start out with a $15 tax. Then we can talk about any kind of governmental interaction, right? Why should we, in effect, subsidize smoking, which we do every time a pack is sold for less than $15? The bill is sent to everybody, and most of us don't smoke. So the results, slow progress. Alton Oxnard in the late 30s has had his landmark paper saying lung cancer and smoking. We've known it for a long time. Here's something in my discussions with people and in the debates around in the city and the state. The illusion of sufficiency robs us of activation energy. You know, if you want to do something different, it takes activation energy. You have to get enough drive to do something. And most people think the problem is largely over. Gee, fewer people are smoking. I don't see it so much. It's not a problem. That's a problem for us, because people think it's over and it's not. The effects are uneven. People in this room probably say, gee, I don't see much of it anymore. My friends don't smoke. I don't see it in restaurants anymore. It must be over. In fact, though, the most disadvantaged smoke a great deal. They become invisible in this discussion, and we need to make them visible again because they are the specific targets of this industry. And we've been co-opted. And I'd like to talk about that in particular, because I think we have been co-opted, meaning that we're playing their game, and we shouldn't. The Constitution, the master settlement, and the protections which are afforded legal businesses create the perfect environment for the cat and mouse game played by the tobacco industry. It's slow, tedious, expensive, and very effective for them. We play their game, and we don't have to. That's the take home. As long as we just do that, we will lose. We will be deluded by marginal improvement and think that we're winning. But tell that to the 5.6 million kids' lives who are at stake. it's a poor excuse. So some good things have happened. Let me tell you about the Louisiana experience because it is unique. It is the only case, to my knowledge, in the history of the United States where a plaintiff has gone from filing a case to prevailing in the U.S. Supreme Court. And there was a judgment for $270 million, and this is the important point, for knowingly selling a defective product. Now, the amazing thing to me is that somehow this fact that it is a knowing defective product is no longer a topic of discussion. It is an addictive poison. And you'll see that it has a number of things that we all know, and we'll get to that in a second. But right now we've been able to, and I said LaToya Cantrell is a hero. She led the smoking ban in casinos and bars in New Orleans. And nobody can tell me it's because it was easy. If we can do it, I promise you it can be done anywhere. We learn by example. We're inspired by example. Just point that out to others, that if we can smoke in Louisiana, beat smoking in Louisiana with the casinos and the bars and the industry behind it, we won. And what it took was real leadership on her part, cooperation, lots of different interested parties came, and we were relentlessly determined. And now other smaller cities are following example in Louisiana. So conventional works, but that just needs to be part of it. We like to say it's like if every city and every town started this, the tobacco industry can't fight that. They want to fight it at a national level where they can really focus on a few points of failure. When it's everywhere, it's like having termites in your house everywhere. It'll bring the house down. And that's one thing that we need to do, but it needs to be more effective, and that is take it to the streets. So here's the addiction machine. 1.5 million new kids start smoking a year, resulting in 40 million adults. About 480,000 die, and then there's the marketing lobby. There's 260 million of us who, for some reason, are strangely silent. We need to change that. And we need to focus on how this machine is recharged every year by attacking the 1.5 million kids. So it's interesting, in the early 1900s, we knew a lot less then, but did a lot more. 15 states, it was illegal. Now we know a lot more, and it's not illegal in any state. Why is that? It's because we need a new approach. If there isn't a more graphic example that I can think of that what we do doesn't work, we need a movement. We need to play our game. We need to activate these targeted groups. We need to change the language. It's an addictive poison. These contents, when they're by themselves in an industrial environment, have to be treated with extreme caution because they're so dangerous. Yet in a cigarette, we inhale them by the millions, and it's okay. Something's wrong. The only thing that will change it is a grassroots movement. We need to drastically increase our conventional approaches, in particular the counter-marketing. I think we could do a lot of things around that. We need to mobilize these target populations, but more than anything else, we need to save our children. And I think that's the thing people will resonate with. Smokers love their children too. Smokers aren't the enemy. Tobacco is. And that's the important thing. It's us to save our kids. Just to briefly go through the evidence, if you look at every one of these things in discovery, every one of these major manufacturers said kids are our target. They said it. We found it. It's in writing. If you look at these packages here, you cannot tell candy from tobacco. That's not an accident. That's by design. It's aimed after children. So we have to ask the right question. Why are we so restrained in the face of an industry that methodically and successfully addicts our children, takes their money, their health, and their lives? I think the 5.6 million kids deserve a better answer than we give them. Let's mobilize for it. I think the APHA is the right group at the right time to do that. 75 years ago, Alton Ochsner wrote this seminal paper with his resident at the time, Michael DeBakey. He was ridiculed in his own profession for that for years. We need to create this movement to prevent the deadly exploitation of our most vulnerable people. Let's finally finish the job that Alton Ochsner started 75 years ago. Let's get in front of those 140,000 buses and stop them and save our kids. Please join us for a movement. Let's make a difference. Let's put an end to this tragedy. Thank you.